This is True North Story, the original podcast series. Learn, love, listen, live. Are you ready to discover your True North Story with your hosts, Tama Fulton and John Hudson Massaro?
Now, what starts with the letter C?
Hey, my cookie monster, my new cookie monster sleep pants came today.
How are they?
Seriously. Well, they're amazing. I don't know how well they will last because that's why I was asking you, because they're fleece. They're super comfy and super, I don't know how they do this, but.
This Tony.
Tony, what's going on?
Yeah, we're just talking about John got some new sleep pants.
Sweet.
Yeah. Super exciting. Cookie monster.
You know what? A round cookie with one bite out of it looks like a C. A round donut with one bite out of it also looks like a C. But it is not as good as a cookie. Or the moon sometimes looks like a C, but you can't eat that. So, C is for cookie. That's good enough for me. Yeah, C is for cookie. That's good enough for me. C is for cookie. That's good enough for me. Oh, cookie, cookie, cookie starts with C. Yeah!
Well, yeah, a lot of people don't understand. Guys like the sleep pants, you know?
Yeah, John wears them all the time, everywhere.
Why? Well, let's just back up here a minute. Since I am in Atlanta right now, or a.k.a. Hot Atlanta, and
right.
We are, been super hot this summer. I'm like we have not. It was 94 degrees. Yesterday, it's in the low 90s today.
Oh, yeah.
It's just brutal. It's brutal. This year has been particularly hot, consistently hot. So I'm a little bummed because of that fact. I can't bring out the sleep pants.
No.
And right? Because I'll be sweating to death.
Yeah. And how often do you, when you do have sleep pants, how often do you wash them?
That's an excellent question. I try and wash them at least once a week. I mean,
yeah,
that's
there
just,
you go. You are a real man, then.
just for sanitary purposes. I'm with you.
Yeah, if you're going to tell me you only wore them once, and then washed them, I was going to be very disappointed.
Tony, with four weeks. You wear them front side and then back side and then inside out front and inside out back. Right.
Well, for me, it's just my wife will say, I think we need, she'll just grab them and wash them.
See, you have a built-in mechanism there with your wife. I'm kind of still out in the, left to my own devices. So
oh,
that can be
see,
a little bit,
yeah,
that could be a little dicey for me.
Yeah, especially if you're in new relationships. That's when you don't know. You're like, okay, I've got to wash them more often,
Exactly. You got to impress a little bit.
You got to hook them before, you let them know the real you. I mean, come on.
You got that right.
And you officiated a lot of these weddings. Is that right, Tony?
I have officiated about 100 weddings, I think, now. So I am an expert on getting the relationship started anyway, I guess. So.
Here's the interesting part I want to know. I want to know this, Tony. How many of the weddings you officiated are still intact?
Well, that's a great question because I do try to keep up with that because I did for a long time. I used to brag that I had a 100% success rate, and that went on for several years. But after once you've been doing them for a while, that your rate kind of goes down. But I from what I know, I'm still in the 90s.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
And not based on your advice about sleep pants.
No. No, I tell them, a lot of mine are just getting married, so they're just not wearing anything when they get married. That's why they're still married. They're
pants,
still happily naked.
Right.
I'm so glad to talk to you because our True North Story fans have been clamoring for Tony Russell, and they want to know, how did this guy from West Virginia traverse across the entire country, have about 16 different jobs, and still sound so happy and upbeat in life?
Oh my God! Do you think I really sound happy? No. Do you know how many program directors in radio told me that that I needed to be more upbeat, that I was too mellow?
What?
I literally had one program director when I first got started that told me when he listened to me on the air, he pictured a guy sitting in a recliner smoking weed.
Really?
Which I'm like, sign me up for that job, right?
Well, you're in Seattle now, so
Hey, that kind of works.
You got your sleep pants on and your weed too?
Oh, of course. No, my kids might
water
hear this.
Bomb
no.
Work. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. No, that was my biggest complaint is I was just too mellow, which I do tend to be. I mean, because I try to think, believe it or not, I try to kind of think about what I'm going to say first. And plus, I'm from the South, and so it comes across as very mellow and slow at times, I think. So I'm glad you think I sound happy. You know, as you know, I worked with Fitz there, and yeah, well, you know. He sounds like he's just had 17 Red Bulls every time he's on the air. But one of the things that he would tease me about is, you know, that I struggled a lot with being up and down, kind of. He used to say that, you know, I was almost bipolarish. And not to joke about that, but, yeah, that's one of the, believe it or not, one of the things I've struggled with since in my adult life is depression.
Wow, Tony.
A lot. I mean, like, you know, it's a real battle. Not major depression, just kind of that low feeling of, you know.
Right.
And,
you know, it's in families. I mean, it's in John's mm-hmm. family. It's in my family, too.
Absolutely.
And I talked to a doctor one time who said that it's taking medication is not a stigma. For a long time, people mm-hmm. have said that anything that has to do with your brain chemicals and medication is, you know, something you don't even want to talk about. But
right. It's
like wearing glasses, he said. When your brain is chemically wired the right way, it's like you can see clearly.
Right.
So if you need prescription for glasses, well, then why not wear them? And if you need something
Absolutely.
For depression, why not take it?
Absolutely. So when I feel it kind of creeping on, then a lot of times I will take medication. I have my favorites. I prefer Zoloft with a Wellbutrin chaser.
Okay.
There you go.
Yeah, if you have a little bit of ADD, then you kind of it'll also help with that. But yeah, so that's been a real struggle of mine, but I'm glad that maybe people don't pick up on that as often as I think they might.
Not at all.
Well, I think the humor, I think a lot of people, I try to use humor maybe not only for others but for myself. You know, I think that it kind of helps me get through it.
Well,
maybe sometimes
when you're on air or you're in a broadcast situation today with social media and everything that's going on, you can be taken out of context so easily and have your words twisted around and all that. So when you were alluding to earlier, like kind of thinking a little bit before you say what you say, especially on air, I mean, I think that's a pretty good approach. I get the shock jocks 20, 30 years ago on radio. I mean, I grew up in Chicago.
Right.
Sam and I both did. So, I mean, we're in the shadow of Jonathan Brandmeier and Kevin Matthews. I mean, some really huge radio people that would just let stuff fly. We don't live in that society anymore, unfortunately.
No.
You can get in trouble in a real hurry, right?
Well, and especially here in the Northwest, that kind of radio and that kind of, it just doesn't sell. I mean, it's, you know, with the whole new rating system that we have as well, we found that, you know, when people get really negative and angry on the air, people, they go somewhere else.
So what was life like for you growing up in West Virginia? What was that like?
Well, I tell you what, it's going to be, my story's going to disappoint you a little bit. I'd like to tell you that, you know, I grew up on a farm and we barely made it. And my dad made me get up at 5 and milk the cows and all that, but the truth of the matter is my dad was a bank president and I went to private school, so
wow.
That's not the story you wanted, I'm sure.
I was thinking Appalachia, walking
yes,
to school with
right.
no shoes.
No,
yeah.
No. Now that was my dad had that life growing up. He was raised, his dad was a coal miner. They didn't have anything. Very, very impoverished community that he lived in. Father was murdered when he was a young adult. I mean, he came out of the coal mines ready to make a difference and ready to have a different life. And he started out in a little loan company and worked his way up to being a bank president before he even had a college degree. And then opened up his own real estate business. And so I was really raised around, you know, business people. And that's what was kind of instilled in me, is to become an entrepreneur and do my own thing. And, and really to work for myself. So when I went into working for other people, and especially in radio, in the new radio world, it was very difficult for me to have a boss and have people telling me what to do. So,
well, you're kind of an out-of-the-box guy, really. You are, Tony. And how was that growing up? I mean, you were instilled with values of being your own man and making your own way. But when you wanted to do creative stuff, how did that fly at home?
Well, that was when I went to see my when I got in radio, I was in my mid-20s, actually late for radio, and I owned my own, or I was part owner in a psychology practice. When I got my master's in psychology, I was getting all these really bad job offers, so I just went to one of my teachers and said, hey, if I can come up with $10,000, will you open up a practice with me? And if he didn't dream that I could come up with $10,000, and I just went and begged and pleaded for 10 grand from my dad, and he said, absolutely, and I opened up my own psychology practice with my professor, and we were doing very well, and I just got the radio bug, and I'll never forget, I went, you know, a few years after I'd started the practice, it was doing pretty well, and I went to my dad, and I'm like, well, I'm going into radio, and I'm moving to this little small town called Wichita Falls, Texas, and I'm going to work in radio full time, and he asked me how, I'll never forget, he said, so how much are you going to, what are you going to make? What are they going to pay you? And I lied and said $20,000. I think it was $17,000, actually.
Wow.
They were going to pay me. But
holy cow.
I gave up everything. I had a free home because my grandparents had passed away, and so I was living in a free house, had this practice that was doing pretty well, and I just felt like that was what I wanted to do, was radio. So I moved everything I could fit into a little car and drove across the country and went into radio. And my dad was just like, what are you doing? You know, he said, you're going to starve. And he wasn't wrong. I mean, I did there for a while.
What was the driving influence to want to go into radio? Was there a catalyst? Was there something that struck you there inside or external or what?
It was morning radio that I really loved. I listened to a lot of morning radio, and I thought it was just amazing how funny they were. And, you know, this is several years ago, so, you know, morning shows just had free reign. You know, they just went on the air and got to do whatever they wanted to do. I just loved making people laugh, and I thought the radio was a great way to do that and to move people. And also, it just opened up what I would learn is it just opened up the opportunity to do a lot of good things, too. Radio in general can build such a family environment and such a following, and it gives you such a podium to do good in your community. Unfortunately, I think radio has gotten away from that, but it is such a powerful tool to change an entire community, too. Texas, you know, when the tornadoes would roll through, man, we would come out, and we were there to save the town, you know, to help get clothes for people, or if there was a flood, we were on it. If a family lost their home, it was back then radio was a big part of their community and part of the family. So that really drew me in, because I still wanted to make a difference in people's lives, you know.
Right. And I imagine, being a counselor, you heard a lot of really bad news, I'm sure.
I did, because our practice became kind of known as the place to go for when children had been abused. So we did a lot of evaluations. So I got to see a lot of the worst of the worst situations, you know. And so we were really involved in doing family counseling and interventions. And, you know, the one thing that just struck me is that I began to realize how many families and how many people in the community were hurting, and how many families were just, even the families on either side of the tracks, were just dysfunctional and hurting. And people were, more people than not, I found, were unhappy, you know, unsatisfied with life. I want to make a difference. I want to help people live a life that's full, and a life that is focused on good things and not the bad, and kind of help pull people out of those horrible situations they were in. I soon realized that's not an easy thing to do.
But every one of us can do a little something, can't we?
Right, right.
Just pay it forward a little bit.
Right, and then to kind of steamroll into that, and that's what led me back out of radio, and I actually went into and became a pastor for a while. I was in the ministry, because growing up in a Christian home, I kind of thought, and in the South, I thought, well, that's the answer. You know, I felt like that I could truly make a difference in people's I would be able to make a huge difference in people's lives by being a pastor and in the ministry. And that ended up, that's a maybe for a whole other podcast, but what I truly realized, to make it a long story short, is I could do a lot more good in radio than I could, ever could as a pastor, and have more of an influence on people's lives than as a pastor. And so that kind of brought me full circle, and I went back into radio for quite a while.
You know, John, my co-host here, when he was in, were you in high school, John, when you took your career exam to find out where your vocational exam?
Either maybe eighth grade, freshman mm-hmm. year. Where you take that exam, Tony, that tells you what your aptitude is for certain professions or whatever, or what you're most gifted.
Well, John was either supposed to be a pastor or a funeral director.
Oh, wow. Sympathetic.
Talk about inspiring a freshman, woohoo, let's just march out the door right now.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not what a freshman wants to hear, is that you're going to be a preacher or the funeral director. The funeral director actually may...
Excuse me now.
I can tell you this, being a pastor for a few years, the funeral director may be more uplifting.
you're not that far off there, Tony. I'm thinking pastors get a lot of... They get hit with a lot.
Yeah, that was, like I said, a whole other podcast there.
You know, we're talking about the election coming up here pretty soon, and mm-hmm. and I know that the Clintons are pretty good friends of yours. I know Bill and you hang out quite a bit. And
oh, yeah.
I was just wondering if he was around, if we might be able to ask Bill a couple of questions.
Hold on a second. He's actually, ironically, he's visiting here in the office. Hold on.
Oh, okay. All right.
Oh, my.
This will be fun, huh?
Yeah.
Hello.
I didn't know Bill was in that.
Mr. Clinton.
Oh, what's your name?
My name is...
North Stories, meant to inspire, encourage, motivate, and offer hope. And now, back to the program.
Emma, and this is my co-host, John, and we're so thankful that you agreed to come on the podcast here last minute.
Tama. Hey, Hillary, I might have another intern on the line here. You looking for another position, Tama? Can I interest you in that? Maybe an internship.
An
down
internship?
Here. Oh yeah, the first dude. That's what they're calling me.
Yeah.
All right, that's enough of that. I
gotta
get
him on. Man,
I had to send him back out there. He's got to go take his medicine. Cholesterol's up.
His cholesterol's up. I can only imagine. Oh my goodness, that was fun.
That's incredible. Tell us a little bit about that. Was that just something that came naturally, or you
realized? It was when I was younger. I can't do very many voices anymore. When I first met Fitz and we were doing mornings together in Wichita Falls, Texas, I could do a ton of voices, and I really can't do that many. The other one I used to be able to do, which was now, like, I can do all those voices that they're out of date. Like, I could do Ronald Reagan, Jimmy Carter. I could do some of those, and like no one cares about those anymore, right? And then
it's
I could do Hank Hill. Damn it, Bobby.
Oh, really? That's really good. Yeah. From King of the Hill, right? Okay. Yeah. It's funny though, because the voices that you talk about are different now. Those voices, like you listen to Bill Clinton or Ronald Reagan, are the ones you talk about.
Yeah.
Now people don't talk that way as much anymore.
They don't have that. There's not anyone that's in the political arena per se that just has that really unique voice. I mean, I guess Barack Obama does. When I got started in the radio, I guess it's been 20 years ago, that was a big thing. You know, everybody was doing what we called the bits on the radio and voices and fake. You'd have all these people call in, you know, and with fake voices. And so I was a natural fit for that back then. I don't know that people do that so much anymore, you know.
What were those guys that were on air, Tony, that used to do the prank calling? They had a whole bit. I think they were out of New York. They were the something brothers or something.
Right.
And they would call up and they would prank people. That was the whole thing. And that was their whole bit on radio.
Oh, yeah.
They'd call people the Jerky Boys. Boys, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And they would call up and they'd do different voices. That was their whole shtick.
That was,
and they're making, bunch of money.
I loved that stuff, you know. So.
And I don't know if it was them or not, but they called up Quaker Oats to thank them for putting Barbara Bush on the cover of the can of oatmeal. Yeah.
Yeah,
man.
So great. Well, you know, a lot of the lawsuits and all that stuff that occurred shortly thereafter put an end to all that. So,
yeah, you're probably right.
Now all the shows use actors and call them real. So I don't know if we should say that or not, but in every city,
right?
Oh, it's which is so funny because like you were talking about your community involvement in like radio and the newspaper and community bastions of the community that would step in when the community was in need, right?
Yeah.
And I'm just curious if that's like been replaced by social media or what. Everybody knows everything that's happening within seconds, and they see it on their Facebook or whatever, Twitter, and then I'm not sure they do anything. It's like, oh, man, that sucks.
Right.
Yeah, it sucks for them. You know, Louisiana is, you know, under 30 feet of water, and then they're on to the next thing. It's like, oh, but Kim Kardashian did this.
Right. John, when I started in radio, a lot of the stations were still family-owned, so the families lived in those communities. So you sure as hell better be doing something if the community needed you. I mean, they knew it. They lived there. So they knew what was impacting the community. Well, now that's unheard of, especially in larger cities. The radio stations are owned by someone that's maybe visits once a year, if that. When something's happening, you know, we all watch the news and it impacts us. We see what's going on in those cities and it bothers us, but not nearly like it does if you were lived there and you're a part of that community. I mean, that was the thing, Tama, that really drew me to the radio business was entertaining, making people laugh, doing the stupid voices or trying to imitate voices, and also realizing eventually, man, what an opportunity to help a lot of people and get involved. And for me right now, it's just most, I try to blog or I just do writing or still have that social media following that I just use that to either blog or just write things that I feel like are helpful to people. And
I love your blog, The Next Half.
The Next Half, yeah, thenexthalf.com. I started that when I was getting in my mid-40s and having a midlife crisis, and I was like,
oh my goodness, you transformed yourself, Tony. You transformed yourself from the inside out. Talk just a little bit about just getting in shape and just telling the truth about what it meant to you to hit 40.
Well, I tell you what happened right around the mid-40s, I just began to realize that I just wanted to figure out who am I? You know, what do I really believe? And I just wanted to try to get healthy physically, mentally, spiritually, and all the above. And my whole world got rocked spiritually. And now this is a true story, and I don't know if it's going to make any sense, so I don't even know how to tell it, but I was on my way home from work at the Wolf one day, the radio station, and I was in my kids' iTunes library had gotten in my phone somehow. So I looked down, and there's this artist by the name of Macklemore in there, okay? And at the time, I was not real familiar with who Macklemore was. I didn't have a clue, but I looked down, and there's this song that really got my attention, especially being a former Southern Baptist pastor. It was called Same Love. And I'm thinking, what in the world is this? This
right.
Song? And so I started listening to it, and as you probably know, the song is if you listen to the song, it kind of throws you off a bit, but if you've seen the video, you know that Macklemore writes this song. I think his uncle was gay and wanted to get married, and at that time couldn't. And so it's this song about two people that love each other but are being harshly judged, can't get married, can't have a normal, what we call normal relationship because of the stigma that's associated with it. And he starts singing and he says, he's talking about the Bible, and he says, they call it wrong, they say it's wrong because of this book that was paraphrased and written over 3,000 years ago. And he says, is it true? I don't know. And as I'm listening to this song about these two people that love each other, but because of religion and because of all these beliefs people have.
And you can be cured with some treatment and religion. Man-made rewiring of a predisposition, playing God. Oh nah, here we go. America the brave still fears what we don't know. God loves all his children. It's somehow forgotten, but we paraphrase a book written 3,500 years ago.
Bye-bye.
I don't know.
And I can't change.
They're not free to love each other. They're not free to have the life they want. And I just began to cry as I'm driving down the road. And I'm like, what in the world is wrong with me, you know? But Yeah. It was like this powerful moment of, okay, my whole life I was raised in this belief system. Why do I believe it? Have I ever taken the time to listen to what other people believe? Because I think their religions are crazy. They probably think my religion's crazy. I think people that don't have religion are crazy, but they think. And so I just began to open up my mind to all different thoughts and all types of religions and people that believe and don't believe. And it just kind of, I remember I went, it was around the time we had to vote for whether we were going to approve same-sex marriage. I don't think they called it that. What did they call that when we had to vote for it? Was it marriage equality? What was
it?
And I went home and my wife and I were talking and I said, you know, if I followed what I was raised to believe, I would have to vote no. And I said, but everything inside of me says to vote yes, which I did. I voted for support of gay marriage. And just that whole thing just really sent me on this journey to figure out what I believe, what I don't believe. And that was a huge part of my transition in my midlife, is to just have to take a step back and say, you know what, there's some things that I'm going to have to ditch, some beliefs that I've got to get rid of. It's hard to explain.
Really did go through a transformation in a lot of different ways, and you've come out the other side now. And do you think that was a good journey you were on?
I think it's a journey you have to go on. You know, if you say you believe something, and, you know, if you're, if whether you're a Christian or whether you're Muslim or whether you're none of the above, I think you owe it to yourself to go in search of answers. And you can't do that just by by listening to people that believe the way you believe. You've got to sit down and read and listen to people that believe differently than you do. Because you've got to otherwise you're not really living a life with conviction. You're just living this life that you were told to live.
Right.
You're just living out a belief system because that's what mommy and daddy told you was true. And
that's really interesting, Tony, because one of the things that Tam and I talk about with True North Story a lot is that we want people to find the why behind the who. And I know that sounds somewhat cliched at times, but if you ask people your why, and all of a sudden they get this deer in headlights look, and it's like, well, what do you mean? Or, why what? You need to clearly articulate why you're doing what you're doing. Why are you living the life you're living? Are you passionate? Are you engaged? Are you doing something, you know, outside of yourself? Most cases, the answer is they don't know what you're talking about. You know what I mean? It's like, well, I got to have a job. I got to put food on the table, or this is what I went to school to do, you know, or I got kids to feed. I think the quality of life for individuals goes up so much more if they're willing to invest in that. The time and energy and effort required to finding the why for themselves. And it can be all different things for all different people. But if you're just going along because society tells you, or because your parents told you, to your point, Tony, or because it's the way you've always done it, that doesn't help anybody, least most yourself.
You wouldn't believe the guys I went to seminary with, that the few that I still talk to today, that we'll kind of get together, and a lot of us have kind of stepped out of the religious arena, and I'm not encouraging people to do that. I'm not bashing the church here or anything like that, but you know, those of us that kind of just took a break from it,
Right.
And especially those of us that moved to the other end of the earth, like I have, from West Virginia to Washington. I mean, the only way I could have moved any farther is to go toward the end of the ocean. So here I am, I'm on the other side of the earth, where I'm truly free from judgment. No one, for the most part, back home knows me. No one's watching me. So can take the time to totally get a walk out of that religious environment, away from the church for a while, and just begin asking questions, reading other material, and then come back to it. Wow. I mean, it's a totally different world, man. You begin to say, now that I think about that, or now that I hear someone else say that, that sounds pretty freaking weird, man. I'm sorry, that might be offensive to some people, but you know, you really, to get away from it and then come back, because when you're in it, it's just that world you were raised in. It just seemed normal. Mom and dad told you it was true. The pastor told you all this stuff's true, and these very powerful people, well, they would never lie to you. And so you just grow up in this one, in this world, and to step out of it for a while and then come back is when you kind of really know who you are in your heart of hearts.
Right.
And you own it for
because
yourself.
You're coming
right.
Exactly, because you're coming back to it on your terms of now knowing what part or what role you want to play within it.
Yeah, what do you want to keep and what do you want to get rid of?
That's powerful because a lot of people have negative stereotypes related to organized religion.
Yeah.
But all kinds. You need to have, you know, as a believer myself, Tim and I talk about this a lot. We are so focused on the personal relationship piece.
Right.
And that's just for us personally because we feel that that's super transformative. If
right.
you focus on that personal relationship instead of all the organizational things, then you're more focused on the picture outside of yourself.
Yeah.
Which I think is what Christ wanted to begin with, which is the collaborative, right? The collective, that which is love everyone and understand and be tolerant and inclusive. And a lot of the things that some people argue religion did the opposite of for a long time.
Oh, yeah, and, you know...
In some cases.
It's a wonderful thing, but I think it's also been one of the most destructive things we've had here on the planet, you know, and depending on whose hands it's in, you know. I grew up in a time where it was used to manipulate a lot of people. I find it in the Northwest to be more accepting and more focused on the loving and grace aspects of it, which is what drew me in.
It's really interesting that you bring that up, Tony, because coming from Atlanta into Seattle, having never been to Seattle before in my life, there is a vibe. There is everything's going to be okay. I can't put it in words, but it's very, very different from Atlanta, even different from Chicago where I grew up, where we grew up. Just is a vibe like, hey, we all get along here. I don't know. You know what I'm
It's the most amazing
to?
Place I've ever lived. And one of the things is, John, what you're experiencing when you come here is the same thing anyone does from the South and the Southeast, which is where I'm from, too, is legalism is, for the most part, dead up here. When I moved up here and went to, and I was a pastor for a while when I was up here, and, you know, the first few events I went to, people were serving wine or asking me if I wanted a beer. Now, do you think that ever happened in Texas? I'm telling you what, had someone saw me out at a restaurant drinking a beer or having a drink when I was a pastor in Texas, I would have been done.
Go directly to jail and do not collect $200.
If I had stood up on a Sunday morning and said, you know what, guys, I don't know, I don't fully understand it, I don't quite get it, but, you know, I'm just going to let you know that I'm going to support gay marriage, I would have had been unemployed by noon. One of my friends is still a pastor of a very large church in Texas, and when I told him, you know, that I said, you know, I think I'm kind of leaning more toward the progressive Christianity, and he just couldn't believe it. I don't know that I've spoken to him since. It was appalling to him. You don't experience that in the Northwest or on the West Coast nearly to that level. I think that's why my wife and I love it here so much. Is we just you just escape that hovering of judgment you think that feels like you're always experiencing in the South in the religious world. So although I gotta say, one of my favorite pastors of all times is in Atlanta, Andy Stanley, greatest communicators on earth.
I try to go to Passion every Sunday, Passion City Church. Louis Giglio, who grew up in the church under Dr. Stanley, he and Andy Stanley were buddies. Andy and like Louis and Levi Lusco, who was on this podcast, who get it, what we're talking about, you know what I mean? Giving messages and speaking into people's lives in a totally different way than even the way I was raised, the church I grew up in. That message is resonating with a lot of people in a significant way that is going to impact our society positively. I really do believe that. I think there's hope on the horizon.
Yeah, I would agree with you 100%. I think that the church either has, and this is the very controversial, but the church is either going to have to change or die. It may be a long process, but they were already on their way to dying out, and they flipped a bunch of different switches and and realized that some of the churches have not, and they're easily to spot because their parking lots are empty on Sunday. But I've also got friends in the, you know, I went to a Baptist seminary, the largest Southern Baptist seminary in the country, and so, but they don't see it that way. You know, they're like, well, Tony, if you know, that's, they'll say they're watering down the word, you know, they're watering down the gospel, and that's not right. You've got the fundamentalists that are still very offended by the Louis Giglios and the Andy Stanleys and those guys, because they think that what would the word I'm looking for? Compromising? I don't see it that
right.
way. But
Tony Russell, I am so glad that you're living out the gospel in your own life, and you're still helping people, and you are still writing, and you're still kicking the pants, let me just say.
Well, thank you.
You got so many folks all around the country who just love you, and just so glad to talk to you on True North Story.
Well, thank you very much.
So, hey, Tony, what's next for Tony? I did want to ask you that.
That's
what
a good
what
question.
Do you got on, yeah, what's out there?
I bet Tony's still wondering himself.
Well, my wife and I have decided that the Northwest, this is after, well, we want to stay in the Northwest. I'm like, well, so we're here for good. I believe it or not, I sell insurance.
That's what I say. You're living out the gospel.
I'm selling fire insurance.
That's right.
No, I'm joking. I sell insurance, and I absolutely love it. I miss being on the radio. We'll see what happens, but for now, it's this is my new life. I honestly don't know.
And that's okay.
Yeah, I'm only 50. You know, so. Haven't found my niche yet, but that's all right. So.
Well, you know, when you figure out what you're going to be when you grow up, let us know.
Oh, I will. We can do another podcast.
Absolutely. Tony,
awesome.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Preacher man can save a soul like mine. Miracles are just too damn hard to find.
Thank you for listening to True North Story, the series. Follow us on Twitter at True North Story and tune in next time for another True North Story.
In the water, 'cause the good Lord ain't